Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Tim, and welcome to History Dweebs. Today, I'm joined with Brandy, the blue-haired beauty, Herman. How are you today, Brandy?
I'm well. How are you, Tim?
I am good. The Colonel is not with us today because he's out doing very important Colonel stuff.
Sure.
And today we just have a short podcast. It's, from time to time, we're going to do these shorts. Some of these topics that we find interesting, there's just not a whole lot of information on. And so we just want to do some podcasts. So when we do that, we don't invite the Colonel because we know he has a tendency to elaborate quite a bit.
Long-winded.
Yes, he's long-winded. So today we're doing, in honor of Black History Month, we are going to talk about Elizabeth Bessie Coleman. And Bessie, actually, I love this story because she is one of my favorite people in history because of her, she was a person that would just not let anything stop her from reaching her goals. And I think that, you know, I really admire that. So we're going to go ahead and get started. Just to remind you again, if you have suggestions for podcasts, please let us know. We would love to hear from you. You can just like us on our Facebook page and inbox us there, or you can send it to our email address, which is historydweeb, that's historydweeb, @yahoo.com. So with that being said, Brandy, won't you tell us a little bit about Elizabeth Bessie Coleman?
Bessie was born on January 26, 1892 in Atlanta, Texas. Yeah, it was a town of less than 1,000 residents, and she was the 10th of 13 children to George and Susan Coleman.
A large family.
Yeah, they needed to find another hobby.
Yeah.
Her parents worked as sharecroppers. Her father, George, was part Cherokee and African-American, and her mother, Susan, was an African-American. Let's see, when she was very young, George decided to move the family to Waxahachie, Texas.
Oh, there probably was a lot going on in Waxahachie.
There was.
I mean, who wouldn't want to live in Waxahachie?
I want to move there now.
Yes.
But they wanted to make a better. He wanted to make a better life for his family, so he purchased a quarter-acre plot in a black section of town, and he built his family a small little three-bedroom house. And they were Bessie was about 2 years old when they moved into that house.
Yeah, and then we're talking, you know, this is not long after, really that long after the Civil War. So this is, you know, the segregated the South.
She actually lived in Waxahachie, Texas, until she was 23 years old. She began attending school there at 6, and she walked 4 miles a day to get to her segregated one-room house, schoolhouse, sorry. She completed the 8th grade, where she excelled in reading and math. She was, by all accounts, she was a happy child. She played, she carried on, played with her brothers and sisters, which she had plenty of them. They had a baseball team, so she was doing all right. In 1891, when she was 9, George decided he didn't want to be a sharecropper anymore.
This is her dad.
Yes, George decided he didn't want to be a sharecropper anymore, and he didn't like the racial barriers he was facing in Texas, so he decided to move to Oklahoma.
Which was then still like the Indian Territory,
right? It was called the Indian Territory, yes. He was going to go there and find himself some better opportunities. And Bessie's mother, Susan, said, nah, I'm not going with you. And Susan and her kids stayed behind.
So they stayed in Waxahachie. And so basically dad leaves mom and 12 kids behind.
Right. Well, and eventually, not long after George left, the boys left and went up with him, which sort of left Susan and the girls. There were four girls all under the age of 9, left them back in Texas.
Yeah, so they were just all girls.
Yeah.
All girls there. No, okay. No man of the house.
A lot of estrogen.
Yes, no man of the house around.
Within days of George leaving, Susan found a job. She was a cook and a housekeeper for Mr. and Mrs. Elwin Jones. And they were very generous. They were good to her. They allowed her to continue to live at home. And they would give food and handed down clothing to Susan and the girls.
And this time Betsy took on kind of the maternal role with mom out of the...
I was working on it.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm working on it. I'm just helping out.
You're a helper.
Yeah.
So
I'm a giver.
While her mother worked at the Jones, she did. She took over the surrogate mother role, and she would keep house at her house, make sure all the kids were fed and clothed and bathed and all those kinds of things. Schoolwork was done. But every year, all that routine was, shattered with the cotton harvest, and everybody had to volunteer and go do the cotton harvest. There was cotton to be brought in. So she would have to go and do that, and they got everybody to do it.
Yeah, and I mean, it was really a hand-to-mouth existence.
It really was. She completed, she completed all eight grades of her schooling at Missionary Baptist Church. Before she had to go to work and help her mom. When she turned 18, she took her savings and enrolled in Oklahoma Colored Agricultural and Normal University. It's now called Langston University in Langston, Oklahoma. And she completed a term and her money ran out and she had to go on home. So that's kind of her early years before she came back to Waxahachie.
Yeah, and then so after she had to drop out of school because she didn't have tuition, her brothers that we mentioned earlier had moved out of the home, and then they moved to Chicago. And so in 1916, at age 23, Betsy moved to Chicago for better opportunities, where she found work. She lived with her brothers, and she found work at the White Sox Barber Shop as a manicurist. And it was there while working at it as a manicurist that she met some of the more prominent African-American citizens of Chicago. And she also... I think it's a little
bit
before... This was a little bit before Oprah. But she... was able to, while being a manicurist there, she heard stories about flying, and there were no black aviators at the time, but a lot of the guys, as she was working there in Chicago, this was right, when she arrived in 1916, was right before the war. First World War, and then as guys started returning from the war, she'd heard stories about the pilots. This was not that long after 1903 with the Wright brothers started flying. So, I mean, this is
right.
only, you know,
new 13, technology.
Yeah, this is new technology. But she started hearing tales of pilots who returned home from the First World War, and... in fact, at least one of her brothers served during the war, and he would tell her about the French pilots and how French women would fly planes. And then he would kind of taunt her and tease her that, you know, that you know, look, you'll never amount to nothing, that, you know, over in France, even the women fly planes.
He's a big supporter.
Yeah, so he would tease her. I think it was all in good nature. But Betsy was a person who was really determined, and she became very interested in flying, and she wanted to take lessons. And then, as I said, she had met some very prominent African-American customers working as a manicurist, and one of them was Robert Abbott, who was the publisher of the Chicago Defender. I think, I want to say he was the first African-American millionaire. I'm not sure, but
Unconfirmed stat?
No, that is not confirmed, but he was very wealthy, and he liked Betsy's determination and wanted to sponsor her in her goal to become the first African-American female pilot. The problem was that no school in the United States at the time would accept her because she was African-American. She had applied to several different flight schools. They've all rejected her. And her only option then was to go overseas to get the training that, you know, that she wanted. So with the help of Mr. Abbott and other backers, they sent her to France. And so she was able to go to France and learn how to fly. And she traveled to Paris in November of 1920 and took lessons and was there for about a year. And she became the first woman of African-American descent to earn her aviation pilot license. She came back, sailed back home to New York in September of 1921.
Why didn't she fly?
And, well, I you know, that was prior to a transatlantic flight, a little bit before Charles Lindbergh. She took a boat.
Did she have a plane?
Not at that point, she didn't, but she came home, and she was kind of a media sensation. She arrived in New York, and there was a African-American play called Shuffling Along that was on Broadway, and she went there, met the cast, and kind of became the toast of the town. And, you know, they introduced her at the show as being, you know, the first African-American female pilot. So she had accomplished what she wanted to do, but at that, and she went on a speaking tour and spoke to a lot of African-American groups around the country, but, and she was doing that. She was doing those speaking tours so that she could, raise money to buy her own.
A plane,
exactly, because a pilot is, you know, a pilot wants a plane, obviously. She went back to work in a beauty shop in Orlando to earn some extra money as well.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
To buy a plane. And in those days, you know, there wasn't a lot of career opportunities for pilots. They were, certainly pilots were used during the war, but there was no, you know, passenger air was not established at that point. So the only way to really make any money in the field was to do barnstorming. And so you know what barnstorming is, right?
Storming a barn.
Yeah, storming a barn. It was
make it rain.
It was air shows. Basically, the pilots would do death-defying tricks. And loop-de-loops and, just crazy, crazy, crazy stunts. They would get out on you've probably seen the old footage where they'd get out on the wings and juggle balls or whatever. But that was really the only way, because airplanes were still new, so it held a fascination for people. So barnstorming was a way that pilots could earn a living. So they would go town to town and do these stunts, very, very dangerous stunts, to earn money. And I guess it would be, you know, last time we talked about freak shows, I guess this would be, you know, sort of like that. Obviously the pilots were very skilled and talented, but it was, again, playing to that same reality TV show type of audience. People went to it to see all the tricks, but in the back, you know, it's like it's like going
to see someone going to die.
Yeah, it's like going to see Evel Knievel, right? And a lot of them did die. But Coleman knew before she wasn't at that level yet where she could do those tricks and do them successfully. So she went back to France and studied some more so that she could become proficient enough in her flying that she could actually take part in these barnstorming. Her ultimate goal was to open a flight school for African Americans. That was her dream. But in order to do that, she had to raise some money. So she went this barnstorming route. And again, she came back in... so she went to Europe again in February of 1922, and spent the next few months in France completing a advanced course in aviation. Mm-hmm. And became, you know, she really impressed the aviators in Europe with her skill and her determination. Like I said, she didn't let anything stop her.
She had moxie.
She really did have moxie. And so... she came back to the United States, and then for the next few years, she did barnstorming, and she did these. She traveled the country doing these very, you know, these daredevil maneuvers, like figure eights, loop de loops. They call near ground dips, where she would fly really close to the ground, and she was just very well received. There was one of the larger events occurred in Chicago at the Checkerboard Aerodrome in Chicago. And in fact, the last time I was in O'Hare Airport and was leaving there, they have a street named after Bessie Coleman.
Did you get your picture taken? No, I did not take a selfie.
Oh, she was very popular on the speaking tours and the barnstorming tours. And again, she never lost sight of her goal, which was to open a African-American flight school. She was very popular in the media, especially African-American media. She was offered a role in a featured film titled Shadow and Sunshine. It was being produced by an African-American film production company. She accepted the role in hopes that it would advance her career and finally provide her the money that she needed to establish her own flying school. But upon learning about the first scene of the movie, which required her to appear in tattered clothes with a walking stick and a pack on her back, she refused to do the movie because she said it fed into derogatory stereotypes of African Americans. So it was would have been a great opportunity for her in terms of financial rewards so she could start school, but she would not do that at the expense of feeding into the black stereotypes at the time. So she continued to do the barnstorming, and she had a crash. She had several accidents, and in one crash in Los Angeles, she broke her leg and messed up her back quite a bit. But she recovered and sought to purchase a new plane for her barnstorming, and which she did. She bought a used plane, and that she was going to first fly in a exhibition in Jacksonville, Florida. Her mechanic, William Willis, flew to Dallas to get the plane, and on his way back, they had an air show scheduled in Jacksonville. This is in April of 1926. They had a air show scheduled in Jacksonville, and William Willis went to Dallas to get the plane. He flew it, but he had to make several stops along the way, forced landings, because the plane that they purchased was such in poor condition. It was poorly maintained. It was worn out.
You really don't want to buy planes used, I think.
Well, I mean, that's all they could afford. They didn't have a big budget, so they had to take what they could get. And upon learning the condition of this plane, Coleman's family and friends, begged her not to fly in this aircraft that wasn't safe. But, you know, she was never one to back away from any challenge. So she went on with the show as planned, but she went up to she and her pilot, or her co-pilot, or her mechanic William Willis, was flying the plane to prepare for the show in Jacksonville on April 30th, 1926. And the plan was for the next day, Coleman to parachute from the plane, and they had to, which was kind of the highlight of the act. They had to go up and make sure that they were finding the right spot for her to parachute for her landing, and so she couldn't see well enough from her vantage point in the co-pilot seat. So she had to take her seatbelt off and kind of lean out of the plane to get a better view of where the landing would take place, find the right terrain to land. And as she did that, the plane, about 10 minutes into the flight, took an unexpected dive, which threw Coleman out of the plane. Again, she hadn't loosened her seatbelt, and she dropped from the plane 2,000 feet and died instantly when she hit the ground. William Willis, who was piloting the plane, he was unable to gain control of the plane, and the plane crashed, and he died as well upon impact, and then the plane burst into flames. It was later discovered that there was a wrench had been used on the plane and it had slid into the gearbox and jammed it, and that's what it caused the plane to dive. Coleman was just 34 years old at the time, and you know, she lived in an amazing life, and a short life, but an amazing life and an amazing lady. She a public library in Chicago was named in her honor. As I mentioned before, there was a street near the O'Hare International Airport in Chicago named after Betsy. There is a Bessie Coleman Middle School in Cedar Hill, Texas, which was near where she was from, was named after her. And also a street in Waxahachie named after her. And I believe it was 1995, the U.S. Postal Service issued a stamp honoring Bessie Coleman for her courage, and she is now, in 2006, she was inducted to the National Aviation Hall of Fame. So a remarkable person and a true aviator and just an amazing person. So do you have anything to add about Betsy there, Brandy?
I do not have anything. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Brandy. So that's another episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Again, this is just a kind of extra podcast, which we'll do from time to time. We encourage you to, if you haven't checked us out on Facebook, to do so. Like us, please. If you have a topic that you would like to for us to cover, please inbox us at Facebook, or you can send us an email at HistoryDweeb, that's history, DWEEB, at yahoo.com. We're also on, you can download our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And we hope to talk to you soon. Bye now.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.